Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills, but it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Get ready, book lovers. The 9th annual Space Coast Book Lovers event is on June 18th through the 21st in legendary Cocoa Beach. Spend the weekend meeting your favorite authors, discovering new ones, and enjoying book signings, goodies, and fun activities. Choose from all-inclusive multi-day passes for the full experience, general admission with a tote bag, and VIP options. For info and tickets to Space Coast Book Lovers, visit legendarycocoabeach.com. Find your inner bookworm.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Today's episode, we had questions come in from Instagram at Mind Pump Media. We picked the best ones, and we answered them, but this was after the intro. Today's intro was 53 minutes long. In the intro, we talk about fitness studies, fat loss, muscle gain, family life. It's a good time. Again, if you want to post a question that we can pick from, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Organifi. Today, we talked about the red juice, which is great to improve or increase nitric oxide production. What's that? Better pumps, better blood flow, better cardiovascular health. Go check them out. Go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code MINDPUMP, get 20% off. This episode is also brought to you by Seed. This is the world's best probiotic. Today, I talked about how some of the bacteria in Seed's product help with fat loss. No joke. Go check them out. Go to seed.com/MINDPUMP. Use the code 25MINDPUMP, get 25% off. We also have a sale on some programs this month. We have the Shredded Summer Bundle of workout programs and the Bikini Bundle of programs are both 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code June50 for the discount. Here comes the show. 66% of heart deaths happen without any obvious signs. In fact, there's five weird signs that are red flags that may be telling you that your heart is unhealthy. We're going to get into them, and then we're going to get into what you can do to improve the health of your heart.
This is the scary fit tip.
Yeah. This is you talking to yourself right here. You're the guy. No, you're the guy that gets like a symptom and go, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to get answered.
That's why I
can't. WebMD.
Yeah, you've Googled this. This is how this came up right here.
No. It's because, heart issues are the number one cause of death in modern societies. It's by a long shot. And I have family members who had signs that were like strange and they didn't show up. And then next, they had a heart attack. And I thought this would be a great fit tip, but also to talk about the things that the data shows significantly improve heart health. And some of them are obvious, some of them not so obvious. But let's start with some of these weird signs. By the way, none of these signs are pain. So we all know the classic like left arm pain
for heart attack,
crushing chest pain, yes. That type of deal.
Tightness.
Majority of people get a heart attack without those symptoms, which I did not know. 66%, significant percentage of people who have a heart attack without feeling it in those ways.
Interesting.
Yes. All right. So here's the first one, poor sleep.
This one's hard though, dude.
Of course.
Yeah. Everybody gets poor sleep.
They do. But what this probably looks like is a sudden, random, what is going on kind of poor sleep. It's like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. I'm not going through a hormonal change because that can happen as well. I don't have any crazy stress. My bedroom hasn't changed. I'm not taking more stimulants. Like just all of a sudden, I have really, really bad sleep. That's, by the way, that's a red flag for health in general. And it can mean a few different things. It can mean hormone issues sometimes. So when I would train female clients, so we're going through like perimenopause and menopause.
Stress and anxiety.
On its own doesn't mean you have heart.
Yeah, issues. I mean, I feel like that's like this by itself less of an indicator, but this paired with the other
Some of the other ones,
yeah,
is what you'd want to pay attention to. The next one is random anxiety. This also, again, by itself, probably okay, but you're getting poor sleep plus random anxiety. what's going on
here. Yeah, I know too. Even with my wife, it was like when her thyroid was a bit off, like the anxiety really ramped up.
Yeah.
So that was like the hormone factor to that actually was huge.
So Doug checks both these boxes. Going to three now?
Well, he's all right with the next one. Fatigue after small efforts. I don't know anybody.
Yeah,
never get started.
Great level. Yeah.
This one's a pretty big red flag. If suddenly you're doing your normal stuff, you're going up the stairs and you're just like out of breath, or you go take the groceries out of the car, something you do all the time, and you're just like, oh, really, really, really out of breath.
Again, when you make noises when you tie your shoes, though.
That just means you're a dad. It's just, just that's normal. A dad noise.
I would imagine this one is probably the more obvious or the more likely one that you would notice the most. Like, I mean, stand out the most, right?
Yeah, dude, fatigue after small efforts, like that can be a warning sign, especially if it persists. Yeah. It's like, what is going on? Why am I so exhausted?
Well, yeah, especially if you've gone up your flight of stairs a million times, that you've lived in that house for 20 years, and now all of a sudden you have to like grab the rail and go, that was a lot. Yeah. Like, okay, I feel like that would be more obvious than tonight was a bad night's sleep.
I remember you had that after COVID, remember, for a little while? I remember you saying go for a walk and you were like tired.
Yeah, I remember I'd go for this little short walk. It was so bad that afterwards I would like midday have to like take a 30-minute nap. I can never, I'm the opposite of you, right? You could fall asleep right away anywhere. Mm-hmm. I can't sleep in the middle of the day, just almost impossible. I have to be super, but after COVID, I remember right after I had it, I remember that for about a month afterwards, I had that fatigue like that. Mm-hmm. That was very obvious to me because it was so out of the norm. Like,
and that's what it should be. It should be kind of out of the norm type of fatigue. Shortness of breath, walking up the stairs. That's, I think, a kind of obvious one where you just feel like you're gasping. Like, what's going on? I feel like I just ran, but I didn't. And then last, cold hands and feet. These are circulatory. It can point to circulatory issues. A lot of people with cold hands and cold feet. Again, I feel like this is one of those out of the ordinary types of things where it's uncomfortable, where they feel like they're really, really cold and you don't know why, type of deal. Yeah. All right, so let's get into some of the stuff, Doug. And if you can order those in a way that are easier to read, that'd be great. Let's get into some of the things that the data has shown to significantly improve or impact heart health. And we'll start with diet, right? Diet has a huge impact on the health of your heart, but there are particular things in diet that have a bigger impact than others. Now, this is something that we talk about all the time on the podcast, which is to eat a higher protein diet and eat the protein first. Now, why is this good for heart health? Well, this helps with insulin sensitivity and issues with blood sugar or insulin insensitivity or resistance strongly connected to heart issues and heart disease. And eating protein, in fact, there's studies that show that if you eat a high protein breakfast, no matter what you eat for the rest of the day, your blood sugar is more controlled as a result.
Now, that can't trump calorie intake, though.
No.
Because in the context of a calorie deficit, I would imagine that probably would relieve that the most. And in a surplus, this becomes far more important.
Yeah, well, it's important in both. But what you're talking about is the next point, which is to avoid processed foods. If people just didn't eat processed foods, what you would find for a majority, not everybody, but a majority of people, is their body weight issues would largely be solved. You would see... I think if we eliminated processed foods, the obesity epidemic would mostly not be an epidemic anymore. And that's because they just make you overeat. Like I could say right now, don't overeat, because that would be the advice. But I know that that's difficult, almost impossible, if your diet is 70-80% processed foods like most Americans. Avoiding those foods, you follow your natural hunger signals, and you tend to eat a more appropriate calorie diet. So just avoid those
foods. It was my favorite way to help a client of mine that was severely overweight, that knew they overconsumed calories all the time, and not putting them on anything too restrictive. Yep. I would simply, and they would always bounce back with, wait, how much can I eat? Or do I need to cut this? Like, no. Just
do that.
Eat when you're hungry, but just do that. Just eat from these foods. And I normally would list off a bunch of foods for them that were whole foods to choose from. So you choose anything you want from there. Just eat that first, and let's just go from there, and let's see where you land. And boy, the weight would just fall right off. And it's not restrictive.
No, They don't even feel like they're dieting.
Yeah. And so you tell somebody who knows they overeat and needs to lose a significant amount of weight that you're not going to cut their calories, even though you know what you're doing. Right. So I know
what happens.
Yeah. I know I'm cutting his calories. Right. He doesn't know that because I'm telling him eat as much as you want, just so long as they're within these food groups.
That's right.
But then it's like they don't have that psychological battle of I can't do this. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, coach says I can, if I'm hungry, eat, just I got to eat from that list. Like, okay, I can do that. That seems reasonable, and so much success.
In my experience, when I had clients who had weight to lose, they would typically lose about half the weight that their goal weight loss was by this alone.
Yeah.
Half. So I got to lose 30 pounds, 15 pounds will come off with something like this. I'm going to lose 20 pounds, 10 pounds will come off just by doing this alone without me even talking about protein, carbohydrates, fats, or calories or anything else. This alone would typically handle half of the weight loss. And to your point, Adam, my favorite part would people come to me and say, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm eating till I'm full. Why, how am I losing weight? Because it was just, they felt satisfied. Because that's what heavily processed foods do. They make you overeat.
Do you know if the American Heart Association has updated?
No.
Because before that, it was very deliberately targeted to like saturated fats and cholesterol.
Yeah.
And, you know, to avoid by all means necessary.
So we're going to get to that. But okay. One thing that they did that made me upset is they did not come out and, you know, for lack of a better term, condemn heavily processed foods. Their point was, well, eat, make sure you don't overeat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's yeah. Of course. By the sure. way, so well, much
what
of their funding
contributes to that the most.
So much of their funding comes from
yes.
these food companies
yes, yes.
that they have a very yeah. strong incentive to not say don't eat these foods.
Right.
But if I took two groups of people, you know, 100 people in this group, 100 people in this group, and this group I said cut your calories by 500, and this group I said don't eat heavily processed foods, and then followed them for 4 years. The one who's avoiding heavily processed foods would be far more successful
yeah.
than the one who I told to cut their calories. Right. All right, so fats. Let's talk about fats here. Here's the deal with saturated fats. There are polymorphisms. In other words, there are genetic differences where some people do need to watch their saturated fat intake because yeah. it does contribute to blood lipid levels in them that are not ideal for heart health or that have been connected to increased risk of heart issues. There are, however, another significant percentage, a pretty large percentage of people, probably more than half, where this is not an issue. So long as calories are appropriate, everything else is good. I'm one of those people. Like my diet is so high in saturated fat, it's not even funny. Like I eat probably 2 pounds of red meat a day. It is grass-fed, so it's got a better fatty acid profile, but I still have a lot of saturated fat from there, from eggs, from other stuff. And my blood lipids always look incredible. Like I can't make them go bad. By doing that. And there's lots of people like that when their diet is otherwise healthy, this doesn't cause a problem. Now, there are some people, and it's a smaller percentage than half.
You're smaller a lot.
Yeah, where they'll do everything right, then they'll come back and be like, oh, my blood lipids just don't look ideal. Everything else looks okay.
Do you think in that case they're still under the calories still, or do you think they're also probably hitting maintenance to surplus?
When you drop calories, a lot of magic happens.
I mean, this is the yeah. reason why you yeah, keep hearing probably me go back to that is just for this simple fact yeah. is like one of the best things that you could possibly do is just get in a calorie deficit yep. right away, and yep. it clears up so many of these problems, no matter who you are or how sensitive mm-hmm. you are to anything. Just simply getting in a deficit, it seems that like you, if you overeat saturated fats and you're in a surplus and then you also are sensitive to those things, yeah. it can be really bad for
yeah somebody. But I've had a couple, not a lot, I've had a few clients like this where they were doing everything right and the blood lipids weren't perfect. They weren't the best. They were okay, but there were a few things in there that were not great, and we just had them reduce their saturated fat intake, replace it with polyunsaturated fat or fish, and they saw great improvement. So that is the case for some people. So it's not, I'm not one of those fitness people that's like, don't worry ever about saturated fat. Now there are cases,
yeah,
but like you said, Adam, oftentimes it's you're eating too much of everything. You're eating garbage. You're not exercising. It's not the saturated fat. It's all the other stuff.
Do you also think too, it makes a difference if it's coming from a place like red meat with a so high protein version of that versus just like pure saturated fat from other things like oil, processed food.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
So absolutely. Like, and also,
cause that's the other reason why I see when you see these markers mm-hmm. on somebody who has higher saturated fat, it's like, well, where are you getting your high saturated fat? Right. And are you hitting your protein intake through Whole Foods?
I had one client, Jim, Doug knows him, who, I mean, this guy was like,
this is a swimmer guy, right?
Yeah, dude. And he was in his, at the time, late 60s, but like super fit, did everything right, ate a lot of red meat, and his numbers came back and they weren't bad, but he's like, you know, Sal, I'd like to see my HDL go up a little bit, and you know, I'd like to see these numbers change a little bit. What can I do? And all I had him do was change from conventional, he was retired, so he always tried to save money with food, but we switched from traditional beef to grass finished beef. That's all we did, and we saw an improvement because the fatty acid profile is better. And that kind of meat. Fiber is another one.
Funny part though about that, just again, side note, is like you also reduce calories by doing that.
Yep. And increase protein.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
So,
you're
right. You know, it's like, was it because of that or was it because it also brought its calories down?
You're right. You know? Yeah, that's a good point because he didn't track. That's a good point. Very good point. Next up is fiber. You know, contrary to what the carnivore, diet fanatics say, fiber has a lot of data to show its protective benefits. Fiber is also satiating, by the way. Protein is very satiating. Do you know what's under that for satiety? Fiber. Fiber is a great way to get yourself to eat more appropriately with your calories. Fiber comes in, you know, fruits and vegetables, and it's got great effects on heart health. So I don't think eating fiber infused processed foods is the way to go. I remember in the 80s and 90s, there was this high push for fiber, and what people ended up eating were like these cereals that were like super high fiber cereals.
Yeah.
Great way to get gastric upset and blow. Have you guys ever eaten like
The shredded wheat that's just basically like a bale of hay,
dude.
A little tiny bale of
hay.
Like
shredded wheat, bro. Yeah,
yeah, frosted.
Yeah, frosted.
Yeah, 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 frosted. That's the only way it's like edible.
That's not the same thing. I remember eating like I think it was grape nuts. I ate a whole
bowl. Oh, yeah, grape. That's a lot of fiber, and
bro. I felt like so much fiber. Oh, my stomach got so, you know, because fiber will do that if you eat certain kinds of fiber. But fiber is important, and fiber, besides protein. Fiber was the other thing that I would look at.
That's why I think it's so crazy that community that tries to hate on it like you don't need it is that was such a simple fix for so many of my almost always when I had a client, almost always, not always, but almost always when a client had digestive issues, I would look into their fiber mm-hmm. and they were grossly under consuming. I would have like I'd have them eat like 2 cups of berries and like a spinach salad thing. Great. And like all of a sudden and do that for like 3 days in a row and like fixed.
Yep.
And so the fact that there's people that try and say that it's unnecessary. It's like, I can't think of, there's so many clients that simple piece of advice helped them so much. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, this is a great topic for heart health is boost nitric oxide in the body. I looked this up in preparation for this episode. Mm. By age 40, the average person's nitric oxide levels drop by 40%. So nitric oxide,
interesting.
Those of us in the fitness space know it because it's like, you know, boost nitric oxide, get a better pump. What it does is it dilates blood vessels, improves blood flow. It'll lower your blood pressure a little bit, and it contributes to really healthy blood vessels, really healthy blood vessels.
What's the prevailing theory on why you would drop that much by your 40s? What are we doing different in our 40s that would cause that?
I would imagine it has to do with diet and activity and hormone changes.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to see that tested in a fit and healthy population and see if there's a difference there. So this is like the average person. Hmm. So if we took the average fit and healthy 40-year-old, would it be lower?
Probably
like that?
A little difference.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
I'm so surprised we haven't. I mean, we just had our friend Drew Canole on here and talking to him, Organifi products. I'm surprised that hasn't been like a marketing strategy for them for 40 plus people with the red juice.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's incredible.
Well, no, you just said it. So beets and beet, beet powder juice. Supplement. Like you want to talk about, people talk about citrulline. Citrulline will do it a little bit. It pales in comparison to beets and beet powder. That will boost nitric oxide a lot.
And a natural nice
a lot. And the studies on that in athletic performance are amazing, by the way, like endurance athletes. So boosting nitric oxide doesn't really improve strength performance. I saw some studies where people at altitude.
Yeah, like endurance.
We're strong endurance, yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder what a difference it makes. I would love to see that tested with like a healthy, fit 40-year-old and then somebody who is under on that, like you're to your point.
When somebody's unhealthy and they supplement with, they take beets or beet powder,
huge difference.
You see improvement in blood pressure and endothelial health. As a result,
and you'll probably feel that then for sure.
Yes,
in a workout.
Yes. You know, I mean, in fact, you should see the studies on beetroot powder and beets and erectile dysfunction.
I was just gonna say erectile dysfunction because yes. You see that as you're aging.
By the way, that's another red flag for heart health is erectile dysfunction. That's actually one of the first signs that your cardiovascular system is
lacking so well. Blood flow and pumping blood there.
Yeah. So. Speaking of which, PDE5 inhibitors like Viagra, Cialis, great. For boosting nitric oxide. And they're showing studies that people who take them have it's funny too.
Go Viagra.
Yeah, when I first started reading these studies and I didn't know too much about PDE5 inhibitors, and I saw studies like, you know, people who use Viagra regularly, like their instance of heart attack is significantly dropped. I'm like, well, they're having more sex. That's what's happening. that's not the case.
I remember being a teenager in the gym.
It's more cardio.
Where I used to lift, and we actually saw like Viagra and stuff on the. And I remember always thinking like it was more than once, right? That you saw somebody
in the locker room.
Yeah, in the locker room
or drug.
This was over. We shot in it. Remember the gym that we shot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember we
were aesthetic.
With the first
bodybuilders were using that stuff for the pump in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. Like, just didn't. I was like, I knew what Viagra was. Yeah. I mean, as a teenager, but I was like, why would this be in a gym? Like, is there really somebody who's like getting it on in the back and they can't wait to get home?
Stop training there.
Yeah, it's a little weird for me.
Uh-oh.
Later on, found out how great it was for pumps, and I thought, oh wow, that's interesting.
Yes, here's
kind of an expensive way to do it.
Yeah, here's another thing that you got to see the studies on. This mouthwash kills the bacteria produces nitric oxide.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So mouthwash.
I've known about the why it's not good for just because it kills the microbiome in your mouth, which
that's
is
why.
Important.
Oh. Yeah, there is
that's connected to the
100%.
Oh, wow. 100%.
I've heard that a lot with dental mouth health, like also like being correlated to heart health. As
yeah,
well.
That's
like,
also you know. By the way, I'm so glad you said that. I believe that there is some value in mouthwash for certain people who have, issues with like permeability of their gums, like they bleed a lot.
Yeah.
Because bacteria can get in the blood system, in your blood. So I don't think this is true 100% across the board. But otherwise, mouthwash, like using it regularly for fresh breath or whatever, you're killing your nitric oxide, is what's happening. Mm. Lifting weights, another great way to boost nitric oxide and blood flow. You'll notice when you start strength training is that you'll suddenly be able to get a better pump. In your muscles and the blood flow as a result. So strength training. And then sauna, regular sauna use. I think if I'm not mistaken, 3 days a week of sauna use reduced all-cause mortality by 40%, a significant percentage of which is heart-related mortality.
Yeah.
Just because a sauna, what a sauna literally does to your blood vessels is it simulates exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It causes dilation, strengthens them. It again, endothelial
minimal
health.
Stress. Yeah.
Have you guys put one in your house yet?
I'm about to.
I just told Katrina. Literally,
I'm making a space for it.
Yeah. I just told her yesterday.
Did you buy one?
I haven't yet.
Okay. Let's go in the same place.
So yeah. Get like a, yeah. 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 Okay. So you have the little pod, don't you? I'm gonna get like a full on one. Yeah, I want to put it in my backyard.
Yeah,
like a full on.
Oh, like the barrel one?
Yeah, I don't not necessarily a barrel one, but that style outside. That's an outdoor version.
We're gonna put it in our room next to the bathroom because then I like to get in the shower right afterwards. Yeah. But I mean, it's so healthy for you. It improves VO2 max. If you lift weights now and all you do is add sauna afterwards, your endurance goes up significantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just from adding that, you're not even working out more. You're just, in fact, it actually speeds up recovery.
It's a total hack.
Yeah. That's right. Next is to move daily. Steps is a great way to track this. About 8,000 steps a day will give you about 80% of the benefits of moving. You'll get more benefits with more walking, but 8,000 steps is super. I think that's super achievable for most people. And then the last thing is a don't smoke. That is like
anything health related. Smoking, it just takes, oh man, that's the first thing they look for. An insurance company, doctors, the first question they ask you, have you smoked?
I trained a few cardiovascular doctors and vascular surgeons, and I remember one of them who's about to retire, so he'd been doing it for decades, and I asked him, I said, what's, and I was expecting him to say diet, or lack of exercise. No. I said, what's the number one commonality you have among all of your patients? He goes, hands down, smoking.
Always.
Hands down. He goes, it is the worst thing you could do for your blood vessels and your heart health.
Yeah, do you think that's just because so many people used to? And there's like a correlation with that, just because like more than half the population at one point was smoking cigarettes.
Oh no. He had like 90-something% of his patients smoked. So it was like super obvious. Yeah. I don't know.
It's more than just a slight bias. Yeah.
Speaking of studies, I got a fat loss study that is really interesting.
New?
Well, I don't think I've talked about this one before. So it's really interesting. You ready?
Yeah.
A 2022 randomized trial found that Bifidobacterium, this is a type of probiotic, so we know it's beneficial, combined with a calorie-restricted diet. So they compared this to a group who just had a calorie-restricted diet. Okay, so one group, calorie deficit, the other group, calorie deficit, plus using this probiotic. It led to greater weight loss and reduced waist circumference compared to diet alone. And then lactobacillus by itself has been linked to reduced visceral fat in overweight adults. So in other words, in another study, they took overweight adults and just gave them lactobacillus and their visceral fat went down.
Now, is that
probiotics is a fat loss.
I was going to say, is that a common probiotic? Is that, no, I know seed carries that in there, right?
So yes, there's different types of bifido and lacto bacteria. Those are the ones that you'll find in probiotics.
Yeah.
So yes, if you take a probiotic, it should have those in there.
Yeah.
But as a fat loss supplement, how cool is that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's super rad. And then another connected study, this you might like this one, Adam. This is a 2020 study, a meta-analysis, so this is really good, that found that lactobacillus and bifidobacterium in early childhood reduced the incidence of allergies, essentially, and asthma. Oh. Prenatal probiotic use by mothers also lowered allergy risk in infants. So giving it to kids,
interesting.
So if it's like a genetic thing, like I had asthma as a kid. So
we give Max seed, and I obviously have allergies, and he seems to like he is sensitive to it. So hopefully it'll help him out in that direction.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been meaning to hit this topic. It's been up on the notes, and I'm like, what is going on with the platypus? Why did you have notes?
I was still thinking about bacteria, but dang,
that's not the transition.
I've been trying to hammer this one in for the last three episodes.
Okay,
no, just because it was fascinating. I don't know why I stumbled across this particular animal, but I was just like, it's in its own class. Like somebody had mentioned in the title or something, like the platypus, it's literally a science experiment. You know, like it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it looks like almost like a beaver and a duck. Like,
is it because it lays eggs, plus it's a mammal, plus it does.
It lays eggs, which obviously puts its own category. There's only one other animal that does that. It's a mammal. And then, it doesn't have nipples. And it lactates still. So
from where?
It basically just leaks. Like it sweats.
It sweats milk?
Yeah.
And that's how its babies get fed?
Apparently. I didn't know that.
Look this up, Doug.
Its feet too have like this weird venom it produces, which was.
So where do we categorize it? Where does it fall?
It's its own, right?
Yeah. So I actually had to write it down because I never remember the name of it.
But I love the stuff Justin gets into.
Is it you or your kid that's looking? Because I don't know, a lot of my stuff ends up because my son is researching.
No, this is Justin,
it's
bro.
Me. And then, I talk about it with my kids because I'm trying to make sense of it. And I'm like, did you guys know this? Like, hold on. Maybe you learned it in school.
No nipples. Milk is secreted from mammary glands and it pools in grooves on their abdomen.
So they lap it up off their belly? Just blah,
blah, blah. Oh, I don't know this. You know what a young platypus is called? A puggle. That's a
puggle. How cute.
They lap up the puggle from the group.
So what's a group of platypuses? Platypi?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Don't say what you want to say, Jesse.
I know, I won't. I know, sure. This is a family show, you guys.
Wow.
The mother. Isn't that weird, though? I mean, like, what? There's no other animal that's like that.
I've never seen one.
Of your two sons, who's more likely to be into this stuff?
Everett.
Oh, Everett is.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I would have thought Ethan, because Ethan's more the reader. I would have thought
he's the reader. Well, he's more into like geopolitical stuff. And
oh my God, that's deep for a kid his age.
He's so into that. And he's so into like governments and he could draw, I don't know how many country's flags, but he knows them all. He's memorized them all.
Really?
Yeah.
And I totally on his own. It's not like he had to do it for
his interest.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool that he's into that like that.
Yeah. No, Everett's very, he's like me. He's into the random and he's into a lot of like deep philosophical things and like trying to make sense of things, like big problems. And we have like really long discussions sometimes. He's like, Dad, I have to go to bed. You know, and like he's mad at me because we get into this like philosophical topic. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. That all the time. And me and Ethan's pretty much like regular.
You know, that's so like, awesome. You know, my favorite right now is watching Max try and articulate something with a word that he hasn't used yet. So like we were walking and he and I'm challenging his thinking all the time, and he said something and the way he was responding wasn't aligned with like what he was talking about before. And I'm like, wait a second, that was, you said it this way or that way. And you could tell like he doesn't know the word confused, like that he was confused and he didn't know what to say. So he's like, yeah, that's because my brain is broken. yeah. And I'm like, oh, you mean you're confused? You're confused on what? Okay. And then we would explain it. But he's at that age now. It's so fun to watch him search for the appropriate word to describe what he's thinking or feeling. And so he uses his best example of like to do it. And I love trying to piece it together.
I see how you put that together.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's so great that you like.
Have I told you guys that my 4-year-old, he'll come up to us in front of his 2-year-old sister and he thinks he's being like, he's trying to be slick because he wants to say, can I have a treat?
Yeah.
But he comes and he hears his mom and I spell things all the time when we don't want them to know.
Yeah.
So he comes up to us and he goes, hey, Papa, can I have some C-O-Y-K? And I'm like, C-O-Y-K? I'm like,
quick.
Yeah. You want a treat?
Yeah.
So that's the word we. That's what they say for treat.
What'll be interesting does he use it? Remember, I told you the story about my sister.
You guys would do that.
Well, when my sister was little, but it was always the same letters. So
yeah, it's always C-O-Y-K.
Okay, so that's what's so funny is that it was PSRT. I could still remember to this day because that was how we were spelling cuss words, right? So when we were around each other as adults, and my little sister was around, it was we would spell the cuss word, and so she attached it to frustration or upset or like we're you know. So whenever she was frustrated or upset, PSRT. RT. And you knew she was spelling it. She thought she was spelling a cuss word. You know what I'm saying?
So. I was joking with my wife. So I'm like, we should start like a snack food, like a healthy snack food company. That'll be the story. Like,
yeah.
You know, my son had digestive issues. So we decided to make Quake.
That's funny. It seems like the natural progression from that, right? You go from spelling. So, but then once they go to school and they figure out how to put all of it together, now you got to do pig Latin.
Yeah. Well, his mom and him she's teaching them because we homeschool. And one of the things that she's teaching them is sign language, but I don't know any of it. And it's already happening where they're talking in sign language.
Back.
Like, oh, are you guys doing this to talk about your dad?
Oh, that's great.
Like, what's going on?
Oh, he's already putting it together, huh?
He's starting to put some stuff together with, you know what? It activates the same brains as language, right? Sign language.
Oh, yeah. Remember that show I mentioned? Did you guys ever check it out? The one where it's like, you can't say that. But they ask questions of people, like some people that have disabilities, some people that are like priests or like, you know, unique categories of people. It's on Netflix. I mentioned it on the show a while back, but, they had one for deaf people and like they went through.
Oh, were you asking questions that you normally wouldn't ask?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's taboo a little bit, but like also they're like very open to talk about,
that's right.
And try and describe their, you know, their experience and everything.
I told you how, like cause they have like new procedures that can bring hearing or sight to some people who'd never had it.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest, misunderstandings, I guess, that people who are deaf and then could suddenly hear.
Yeah.
They all thought that the sun made noise.
Yeah.
They all said that they were shocked to notice that the sun was silent.
That's wild.
Which, if you think about it, it looks like it would make a lot of noise.
You know, I've been applying that. I mean, it's only been a handful of times, so I can't, like, I don't have, like, a huge example of, like, oh, my God, that totally works. But the handful of times I have used that strategy of not telling my son no and saying,
ask me after this.
And it
works.
Pro.
Yeah.
It's a pretty little cool hack.
I do feel like a lot of things will work on your kid though. Cause he's pretty, like he's so chill.
I mean,
the test will be if it works on my kid.
I know. That's kind of Katrina and I were talking about it and I'm like, you know, we've communicated so well with him for so long that he's pretty easy to, I could even tell him no pretty easy. Yeah. And like,
just has that demeanor.
Yeah. He's not a kid who's going to throw a tantrum and this and that and be that way. And so, okay. Do I have a little bit of a bias? Cause my son is already easy. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like, work working even more like magic with him is just like, shit, half the time he forgets. So it's not, it just shows you that in the moment, like he wants
we'll get back to that.
It's impulsive.
Exactly. It's impulsive. He hears his mom saying, hey, it's time to get a shower, go to bed. No, I want to play with my Legos for 10 more minutes. Okay, well, get your stuff ready, do this, and then ask me after that. And then it's like, he forgets. And so it's like,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm like, okay,
this is kind of adults all the time, and it works.
I'm like, it's kind of a cool hack.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's messed up.
I mean, it's so smart because it doesn't cause that no, and that that natural want to rebel.
His strength is the muscle too of
Of him having to think and connect the dots of like, if I do these things
and just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not indulge right away.
No, yeah. Totally. I mean, I love the delayed gratification that it teaches him. It also connects.
I haven't done it yet. I gotta
try it. I mean, again, like I said, I have a small test group of how many times I've done it, but so far I've been really impressed with it. It's more Katrina and I are training. In fact, she like initially just said no. And then I came back and said, well, do this and do that. And then ask us. And then he actually looked at me and goes, oh, are you the boss tonight and not mommy? And I went, oh God. I said, no, mommy. And then she stepped in and said something like that. I'm like, I don't want it to be misconstrued. So it's us needing to practice to be more consistent with it of like the initial want to say no when that's not what we wanted to do. And so far, so good. So,
hey, so chirp off this. Did you guys know that the first AI, I'm going to pull up this article. The first AI artist got signed.
Musician?
Yes.
Timbaland.
Timbaland. Yes, Timbaland. There's a company that, so he signed his first AI artist Tata from the AI entertainment company he launched.
Wait, hold on. So it's his company. He signed it.
There's got to be.
Was he creating an artificial market?
There's got to be some tax benefits.
That sounds like a really creative. But
I made money off the money I printed right now.
Well, essentially, what's going to probably happen is that you're going to see, and they're calling it APOP, by the way. You're going to see our companies who are going to create characters, AI characters. Probably try to get a following on social media, which is already happening.
It's already happening.
There's
companies already that have fake AI girls that have got a million followers, and they're selling $40,000 worth of product.
I know. And you know, they're not required to
say that. You know how embarrassing that is when you're trying to build a business.
That's like the AI artist right there. The girl with the pink hair right there.
You see the video of the guy that's like getting ready in the morning. He's like normal. He's like, looks like a dude. He's putting his stuff together, all that. And then it literally, he's a hot chick on an AI hot chick. And then,
he manages it,
but he does everything like he normally does, but just as a hot chick on the internet.
It's like a filter, right?
Yeah. And it's like, and he's making all this money because people are like, ooh.
You know what? This is a short period of time before that.
Totally. Then you're going to trust nothing.
Yeah. Well, not just that. Everyone's going to do it and it's not going to be very valuable.
Well, that's what I mean. Right now, it works because it still tricks a lot of people. People are unaware. Once everybody becomes aware, now you're going to be skeptical of everything. You'll be like, even if it's real, I don't know if I trust that person
anymore. Is it going to be a market that's just competitive, though? Like, which company can create the AI person?
Who's got the best artificial nonsense?
You know what's going to be crazy about this, you guys, is that, okay, since algorithms on social media are super advanced and they adjust themselves on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
They're super individualized to you. And it's based off things that we don't even know, but the stuff we do know is like, what you click on, what you hover over, what you comment on, and what you like. But there's other stuff too that they're not telling us. And so your algorithm is super, super individualized in the social media platforms with the best algorithm that can individualize itself.
That's what's creepy is like they measure like the amount of hesitation you have. Eye blinks, like all that
stuff. So I consciously change my algorithm.
Yeah, you can totally do that.
I consciously click on stuff. I don't want to see this. I want to see this on purpose to try to fight it.
I do the same thing
already. But I have to do it consciously.
Yeah, otherwise, you have to be active about it.
So what I'm trying to say is that these AI, there's going to be a point when these AI, I don't know, people or whatever, they're going to adjust themselves to you.
Yeah.
So you're going to get the AI person saying, it's already figured out who Justin is going
to. I mean, we were debating this on our walk.
Listen to
we were debating this on our walk yesterday. And I definitely think there's going to be certain things that it's going to be good for. For example, like it's going to make a lot of things that were out of reach or too expensive for the average person to now have access to consume. And for that reason, it'll be good, right? Mm-hmm. So there'll be things that AI robots and things can create
that somebody else couldn't afford before, that'll be so inexpensive because it's not humans that are having to build it. But then there'll be a percentage of people that won't want that. And they'll want the thing that has imperfections, and that's human made. I mean, yeah. And we already see examples of that in society today. And so I think it'll only accelerate.
But
that.
Is that the same percentage of people today that are like, I want a handmade chair instead of the one that I could buy for, you know, 1/5 the cost? That's a small market. It's not a lot of people. Most people don't want the handmade thing because it costs too much money. They want
we want what we can't have. We have already proven that in the market. We want the things that we like, exclusivity and rare and like that. I mean, you guys know how like the Hermes purses work, like how that works. No. You know, if you guys are like,
is that how you say it? Hermes?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was Hermes.
Versace.
So
I think we're all saying it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say you want to go buy, listen, okay. Yeah, you don't know how this works. Like you want to go buy your wife one. She does. Right. Let's say she's never had one. Right. You want to go buy her one. You go down to the store to go get it. Okay. You don't get to pick the purse. They tell you, you can have this one. No matter what, I don't care how rich you are, you got to buy this one first.
And how do they just,
It's just, Ferrari does the same thing too. You cannot, I don't care how much money you have. You cannot like, they released a new model, SF90, the SFXX, their version. It's like $1 million car.
Sure.
You could be worth billions.
So you can't just go buy one.
You need to have already bought seven other of their models.
Seven?
That they wanted you to buy. I mean, that's an arbitrary number. It's like, it's several. Like you definitely need to have, you can't have just bought one or two. Yeah. You got to buy like 5 to 7 of their other models that they wanted
and
you to buy
first. Company does that?
Yes.
So if I walked in there, I'm like, I want to buy one.
Right. I didn't know that. The one. And people do it and people pay the money and play the game. And then
but it's not a lot of people is my point. Most people are.
I mean, it's enough to prop up those companies to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know,
but there's not a lot of those companies.
I know. But so what my point is, though, it just moves down.
Yeah.
So there'll be that example. So there'll be just levels of it,
mm-hmm.
But people will want exclusivity. People will want rarity. Still people will want what they can't have.
Model, yeah,
and somehow. And so what AI will do really well is it will, you know, the
mass produce.
Yeah, it'll mass produce things that everybody can have. And so somebody who wasn't even at the entry level will now be in the entry level. So it'll just move everything down. But they'll still be the top tier people that will. Mm-hmm. So like maybe like the Hermes purse goes down a level or two, and then there's the next level thing. But that's all it's going to do. I feel like we already have the example now, and it's only going to just gain access for people who couldn't get things before.
Well, the part that's weird, that's going to be crazy that I think is crazy, is because you guys see how fast clips go viral.
Yeah.
And before people realize they're fake, the damage has been done. That's going to happen faster and faster and faster. They're going to put something out. Oh my God, look what happened to the president. Oh my God, look what this person said. Oh my God, look what's happening. And by the time it comes out that it's not real, damage done.
Yeah, I mean, but that,
what's the difference?
But do you believe, so I believe that's true, but I believe that'll only last so long. Because
then we're going to be in a place we don't believe anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, that's not
well, that, or like you're just, I mean, I already catch myself doing this now. So my buddies, we're all on a thread. We go back to since high school together. So that we always send each other shit like, oh my God, check this out. Can you believe this? And I've already watched the evolution of our conversation. If you send me something that's like kind of crazy, I first thing to say is like, did you fact check
it? It's that? Like when I thought Eminem released that gospel song.
Yes.
How
I acted to you right away. I was like, right away, I don't believe you. Like, no, it's not true.
Dude.
And you're like, yes, it is. No, it's not.
Facebook prove to me. Is you riddled prove, with that stuff.
You need to prove to me with multiple different places to prove before now I'll believe it. Where that before a guy like you, I'd be like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, I believe Sal. Sal's a smart guy. He knows what, like, no. It's like, now I don't care how smart you are.
You got fooled.
Yeah, I'm not going to be fooled by the first thing that someone shows me. And that's, and it's still new enough now that we still get a lot of people.
I feel like what it's going to do is there's going to create a market for an arbitrator of truth, which is not good either.
No.
Who's that going to be?
Or some fact checker of some company that.
Or you have an AI fact checker yourself. But I don't know, man. That's going to be weird. Speaking of weird, have I brought this up before? That in Russia, did you know you can pay to get on a boat to go through pirate infested waters?
Oh, yeah. If you're one of the Russian elite, like, I heard that they pay a lot of money to go there to.
And you're armed?
To shoot.
These like, boats are armed with like machine guns and stuff, and you drive through pirate infested water.
See, like basically egging them on to try and.
Yes, dude. And then you.
That's
and
a real thing. Come on, pull that up. Fact check that shit. I don't know if I believe that.
You're so vulnerable. You know, and then you have so much.
And then
gold.
You shoot them.
Yeah.
Come what? On. You know, that reminds me, that's like, they wasn't there that movie, The Game, where you like put the, they took the, like the homeless people,
yes,
put $1 million on their belt if you survive.
Bro, I'm looking
like
up
Russian
Doug.
Oligarchs. That's what I heard is come like, on, that was the only people
true.
Doing this.
What
is,
yeah. They offer pirate hunting cruises.
Wow.
Like $5,800 a day. That's so they go into the most dangerous waters in the world, thrilling. Hoping to be attacked by pirates.
Is that the, like, is that the ad? Is that the, yeah, the yeah. website or whatever? Wow.
Yeah. Dude.
Sounds, actually, $5,800 is not time. Crazy.
Yeah, but we.
That's daily.
Bro, that's got to be some evil, like, yeah, I'm bored. Like, you're a billionaire. I'm bored. Yeah. What do you want to do? I want to shoot some pirates.
Yeah, shoot some pirates.
Let's go
yeah.
sign up. Yeah. That's messed up, dude. Yeah. That's super messed up.
I mean,
and of course,
I mean,
it's Russia. Doug, is there videos of this? I want to see what these
yeah.
look like.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like the human version of going hunting for like tigers and
like
stuff.
Vigilante
like
lions, stuff.
Right? Yeah, dude, but they're people.
I know.
Isn't that wild?
That's and wild. It's wild that you can do it.
That you can pay to do it.
Yeah.
And I wonder who pays to
yeah,
do it.
It's like next level from, you know, those helicopter tours where they like mow down a bunch of pigs that are like running around
well, yeah,
properties.
Yeah. These people.
These people.
Well, yeah. And the pigs can fire back. You know what I'm saying? So it's a little more dangerous.
No, Doug's got a video for
it. Yeah, I don't know if I have a good one.
Okay. Here on, see. Yeah, I want to see what this looks like.
You should go do it, Doug.
Yeah. Do it for my birthday.
Who's, back, my, who's, with, who's the eye patch most likely to do something like that?
To go, Justin. Yeah, Justin.
This evil bastard right here.
You know what? That's why he knew right away. He's like, I already looked into it.
Yeah.
Why
stays in here? It's not it real. Right now.
He's like, I can't take that much time off work.
Can you get a video, Doug?
I'm not seeing anything.
I don't think they're going to share videos. Yeah.
I'm sure they'll pull it off. Like that. That's wild. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, it is.
God, it's crazy.
I got to bring up another one of those studies that annoys me. So this study, I'll read you the title, what this guy wrote. Actually, I'll read the title of the study. Internal focus of attention did not change muscle activation and the rate of perceived exertion in bench press exercises in successive training sessions. Okay.
Wait. Say that again.
I'll paraphrase. Essentially, concentrating on your pecs while benching doesn't activate them more.
Well, based on an EMT thing, right?
EMG. Yeah.
Oh, EMG. Yeah.
So dumb.
Okay. I know. It doesn't. This annoys me because it counters decades and decades and decades of training knowledge and understanding.
It just confuses the average person.
It does, because what I'd like to see is, and this is why it's hard to study. All you can do is EMG, because what you can't do is study to see if they're getting better results, because you don't know if those are the results that would have gotten in the first place. You have to have a twin study for this. You have to have a twin study where one person does it this way and the other person does it this way. And then let's notice the, you know, the muscle development, you know.
You want to know something that irritates me, since you're bringing up stuff like that.
That irritates you.
Yeah, that irritates. Right. And that you
all, pirates.
And it pairs well. This is a good transition, because right. It talks about, so my brother-in-law was like, he was like, he thought it was so cool. He sent me, he's like hardcore into using ChatGPT right now.
Okay.
He's like, just, I told you he fixed his car, and he's like fascinated, like how accurate it is. So he decides, for shits and giggles, he'd ask it what the number one fitness podcast in the world is, or what that. Mm-hmm. And we pop up, which is cool. But then it also tells you, like, if you're look what you're looking for, and like, you know what,
sure.
Yeah. And then, because so we were number one, number two was model was Sean Stevenson, number three was actually Vinnie Torch, which I thought that was interesting.
Oh, okay.
And then some of our other friends and people that we know
right.
in the space. And then it's like, you know, if you're a beginner looking for this, if like Mind Pump's great for this, and what we weren't listening to, I was offended that we weren't the top three for this,
what?
Was science based. That just annoys the fuck out of me. I mean, there's not an episode that goes by that you don't talk about at least one to three studies,
yeah.
And we break them down.
We're not scientists.
Yeah, but that pisses me off.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm annoyed by that.
Whatever.
It was Huberman, well, Peter like Attia,
and Rhonda Patrick. And
the
all
shit that they've
like
been saying, we've been saying that shit for 10 years.
Yeah.
Sure.
But we've just, the difference is we take a study like
got the
that.
Accolades.
And then we break it apart for the average person.
I don't care about a study unless I can communicate it in a way that will help someone, and unless it applies to somebody. If it doesn't apply to anybody, why am I going to talk about a dumb study that's going to confuse everybody? Like, they have all these, like, they'll talk about like fat oxidation. You know, this study showed that this compound increased fat oxidation by 17%. So then they'll do a whole episode, or, you know, whoever will do a whole episode on this fat burning compound. Meanwhile, zero studies show that it actually causes more fat loss. In fact, studies will show that it causes no additional fat loss. This is why people were all got all confused about ketogenic diets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ketogenic diets increase fat oxidation. Well, yeah, you're running off ketones, but a ketogenic diet with the same calories as a balanced diet with the same calories does not result in more fat loss. We just needed studies later to show that.
Yeah.
But they would point out, you know, that kind of data. It's the same is true for studies on markers of muscle growth and stuff like that. It's like, I'm not going to communicate it unless it makes a difference, has to make a big enough difference, and unless it's something that people are going to do.
It's repeatable, it's relatable, and it's something that you can implement as a daily practice.
Yeah, but then it assumes, or you assume, that we're not science-based if we're the number one.
Yeah.
And then we're not even in the top three for that category of if what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. That bothers me. That doesn't bother you? It bothers me.
No, it doesn't bother me.
That bothers the shit out of me.
We get more downloads than they do.
What?
We win. So
let them have.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's even better than just being science based. I think we take the science and we unpack it for the average person.
That's why my favorite guests to have in regards to health and fitness are the scientists who also have a lot of experience working with patients, clients, or with people who've worked with them. Because they always
understand, human behavior, and that is such a big factor to what they're talking about.
Yes, because you got to do both. You have to do both in order to, because humans are complex. Like, if it was just about science, fitness would be easy, you guys. It would be like, do this, that, and the other, and everybody would do it. It would be a problem.
Right. Yeah.
It's about human
controlled
behavior.
Controlled environment is
ideal. Humans are complex. We're weird. We almost never do the right thing for
multitude
of reasons as to why.
Not to mention that the behavioral psychology part makes up more of it.
That's
it's not
everything.
Even, yeah, it's not even like it's not like it was part of it or a small piece of it. It's like most of it.
You take a therapist with 30 years of experience, and you take a scientist in health and fitness who's never worked with anybody, and you have them both work with people for weight loss.
Therapists
will kick the crap.
Therapists would do better.
They could know nothing about nutrition.
They're given terrible nutrition and
they will rock.
That'd be
they
a great crush. Study.
Yeah. There are studies on that.
Not pitting them, but there are studies. But I mean, I would love to see that
on therapy for weight loss. And it produces significant results because that's the root.
Think about it. And we talk about it, we communicate this all the time, that most people think, you know, when they're really, really overweight, unhappy with the way they look, they think getting in shape solves the unhappiness.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
No.
The way they look, but they believe that. They believe that the way they look in the mirror is the reason why they're unhappy. No. And the truth is, they're unhappy, therefore they look that way.
Yeah, and also,
and they have to first get happy,
and the pursuit,
and then that stuff happens, which is why the psychologist
that's right. Better. And it's the proper pursuit of health that results in the improvements in happiness. It's not the you snap your fingers, make someone look different. Yeah. There's a very short period of time.
Just getting to the end result.
There's a very short period of time they feel happier, and then it goes away. And it's like, well, what happened? How come not that much happened?
Well, I'm offended that we're not science-based. I am offended by that.
Aren't you the guy that says that dinosaurs weren't real?
Yeah, offended.
That's why we got fucking
hard.
It's your fault.
It's my fault.
Carbon dating. You took us down like five spots.
Because I shit on carbon dating and dinosaurs.
That's what it is.
We were legit.
It. Yeah. It is my fault. It didn't make sense to me. I'm like, Sal talks about like three studies a day. How are we not science-based?
Well, I have a degree. They don't care.
You're the only one with a degree.
They don't believe in dinosaurs.
Who were we just talking to? They had no idea you and I didn't have our degrees. I was just talking to somebody. Who was that? I wish I knew who it was. And they were just like, what?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I thought you guys
did. I used to be insecure about it. Early days as a trainer. And then later I became like, it was not a big deal.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to talk about what's our site, Doug, to apply to be a trainer here. We got to put this out.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're hiring trainers. Okay. So if you want to be a trainer for Mind Pump, you want to work here. You got to be here, by the way, and train clients both in person and virtually. We are now looking for trainers. However, I'm going to say this very clear.
Have to be able to bench press more than Doug.
That's good luck with that. That's not the qualifier.
No, it's not. It is not easy to be a trainer here. We will put you through the ringer. There is an internship process, and we don't hire just anybody. This is like, if you think you can handle it and you feel like you do a good job. And by the way, when you get hired here, this is a great place. I mean, our trainers are producing tremendous amounts of revenue, having incredible success, but our vetting process is no joke. But if you think you're up for it, you have a passion for health and fitness, you have tons of integrity, and you want to work here and build an incredible career, go to mindpump.com. mindpumppersonaltraining.com/apply. So mindpumppersonaltraining.com/apply. And right now, this is a bottleneck for us, just to be quite honest. We have, obviously, because of a huge platform, we need more trainers, and we're going slow because we refuse to hire trainers that don't represent us in the best possible way. So to speed this process up, we just need to put more people in front of us, but we're not going to hire just anybody. Yep. So CBD isn't that effective unless it's combined with all the other beneficial cannabinoids you'll find in hemp oil. It's true. If you look at the studies, it's the entourage effect. Ned is the best hemp oil extract product in the world. Go check them out. See for yourself. Take it. 45 minutes later, you feel it. Go to helloned.com. That's HELLONED.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get 20% off. Back to the show.
First question is from Dad Fit Life. I'm a 35-year-old father with two young children. How do I know when to push strength or focus on controlling the weight? I want to build muscle, stay strong, and get stronger, but I do not want to injure myself either, so I cannot lift.
Bit of a flaw in that question.
Yeah, what I'm gonna give general advice. I think it's true for most people.
Yeah.
Is most of the time your training looks like cruising, and it's interrupted by short periods of sprinting. Okay, so like chasing strength, pushing performance, pushing muscle gain shouldn't be the majority of your year of training, because that is it doesn't result in good results. Typically, ends up in injury. Now, especially someone like this, how do you know when to do this? When you've got good sleep, diet's great, and you feel great, push it. Otherwise, don't.
Well, the problem I have with the question is that it's not true. You actually can get really strong focusing and controlling the weight.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's not like either or. It's not like, hey, there's times, because this is what it sounds like to me if someone's asking. There's times where I'm like really concentrating on form and I'm going slow. Yeah. And there's other times I'm just trying to get that weight up. It's No, like you can get really strong by controlling the weight and going really slow.
Yeah, slowly.
And you'll slowly add weight to that bar. Now, could you do that? Could you put more weight on the bar and do it explosively, like really fast, just so you could say, hey, I did 50 more pounds and what I did really slow and controlled. But that's not how we measure strength. Like the person who, and again, these aren't like even numbers, but let's say
consistency still wins over those influxes of high intensity and lower intensity.
Yeah, okay, so who's stronger? The guy who can control 4 reps really slow and control for 225, or the guy who can bench press one time 275?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's stronger?
Yeah, the 4 reps.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like we get caught up in like saying that I press 275 and that I'm stronger because I can say that number to my buddies in a circle. But it's like the guy who's controlling 225 for 4 reps slow and controlled is stronger than the guy who just pushed out 1 for 275.
Well, the way I interpret this is, I think what Justin is, how he interpreted it, which is like, when do I train hard and when do I train less hard?
Right.
Is what I'm,
how I'm reading it.
That's what I think he's saying. Because if he's saying what you're saying, I agree with you, Adam. But if it's, and I think this applies to more people. So if I were to reword this, it would be like, how do I know when to push intensity and when to lay back on intensity? You know, I got 2 kids.
That's a better way to ask that.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, okay, some of the best trained athletes in the world, actually all of the best trained athletes, strength athletes in the world, use periodization.
Yep.
It's scheduled periodization.
Scheduled.
It's not because this one came out of the Soviet Union. I mean, they were crushing everybody in the 60s and 70s with Olympic lifting. And it's because they did scheduled periodization. And what they would do is for these periods of time, we're not training at high intensity. And then for this short period of time, we're training at high intensity versus just always see how hard you can go, because that's what's going to get you the best results. It doesn't. For anybody, regardless if you're a dad with 2 kids or you're a 20-something-year-old at home with no responsibilities, most of your training, like 70%, 80% of your training, is kind of cruising.
Yep.
It's those short periods that you push. If you flip that, this is what most people do. 80% of the time they work out, they're pushing it. And then the 20% they cruise because they're forced to, because they're overtrained or injured what's going on. Yeah. And then they go back to the super high intensity. Literally, if you want the best results over time, it's a majority of the time you're kind of cruising. I'm not saying you don't do anything. There's some intensity there, but you're not chasing it and going after it 20% of the time.
But it'll reveal it mid-set, right? Like if you feel like if we're using like the last two reps as the measure, and it was just like, so I could do 10 more reps all of a sudden, you know, and it just kind of, you get a feeling you could actually add weight to. So now we just increase the weights subtly, and we just keep it that trajectory.
Well, we're all saying kind of the same thing, just in a different way too. Yeah. Even though what I'm communicating, my point is like 80-90% of the time I'm going real slow, controlling the weight and just kind of slowly getting stronger. Every once in a while, I want to test what my one rep, what my
jumps.
Yeah. Just to see like, okay, man, I'm controlling 225 so good. I wonder, can I press 275? Yeah,
know where your limits are.
Just once in a while, like very rarely I'm doing that. But most of the time I'm training very slow, controlled, and progressively overloading the bar.
And the best progress I ever made was when I felt like I could add, you know, 50 pounds of the bar, but all I did was go up 10 or 15 pounds over what I was doing previously. I was very controlled. Mm-hmm. That led to the best long-term progress than just going like, ooh, I'm going to go for my max.
Yep.
Next question is from Kathy Steinhilb. When doing sumo deadlifts, RDLs, am I progressing too quickly with the weight because my legs can take it, but my SI joint gets achy? Or is there something else at play?
Okay. When she says, my legs can take it, but my SI joint hurts, it's because, yeah, you are going too high with the weight too fast. Yeah. Your SI joint is the limiting factor here. Now there's more of the story here. So the SI joint, sacroiliac joint, it's right at the pelvis in the back where the kind of where the hip joint is in the low back. So you'll feel kind of the soreness in like one side of your low back. This can often get remedied by doing correctional exercise, single leg exercises,
that's what I would do with this person.
Lateral strengthening. This is a common issue with people who start to get strong with deadlifts. This is what happened to me. Like if I got strong with deadlifts and I started feeling my SI joint, I needed to work on my QL. So like lateral strengthening,
lateral stability.
I knew that, you know, okay, I'm going to go through a period of going lighter, maybe doing single leg exercises. And that usually would solve the issue, but I'd have to stay there for a little while.
Yeah, I would. This person, if this is a client, I would put them over to old timey or symmetry.
Yeah.
So, and it would solve this.
That would fix it.
Yeah. If you literally go run a program like old timey or symmetry and just focus on that and then come back to your bilateral RDLs and stuff and see, I bet you that solves this.
Yeah. And one of my favorite stories around this is like what Justin talks about in his youth when he was trying to bench press, I think it was 4 plates. And you said your shoulder kept hurting. It was always your shoulder that would limit you.
Yep.
And you did what? You did like a whole season of strengthening your just with rotation.
Just rotation and getting and expressing all the different movement patterns. You know, so that way too, it highlighted the instability where I didn't have that control and strength. Mm-hmm. And so once you kind of reinforce that, it allows you to now generate more force, which gets you through that plateau.
And that's how you were able to hit that.
Yeah.
Next question is from Connor Howe Real Estate. Is there such a thing as squatting too deep? I've heard of butt wink, but I'm not sure if that is actually something to worry about.
So any range of motion is too far if you don't have control and stability in that range of motion. So can someone squat too deep? Yeah. If they go beyond what they have control of, and if their stability isn't ideal, then they're squatting too low. Now, the answer is to figure out why they get that instability, why they get that muscle recruitment pattern that isn't ideal, identify, fix that, work on that, and then you're able to squat deeper. But for sure, one of the biggest, I've seen so many people hurt themselves because they hear the message of squatting, you know, butt to the ground, but they don't have the strength or stability to do so, but they hear that. So they go to the gym and they really get all the way down. They go
zero to super low.
Yeah, and their feet are caving in and they have all these other issues and they're like, I hurt my back, it's squats. Squats are bad for your back. No. You weren't able to perform those squats in a way that didn't hurt your back. So we got to back off a little bit on your technique and form. Maybe have you do a less deep squat and then figure out why.
I think it's because there's so much controversial information around butt wink is what causes questions like this. In my experience, I've never had a client because there's a bit of it's natural when you get really, really deep ass to grass where you'll have a little bit natural.
Yeah, watch Olympic lifters.
There's a little bit of a tuck that's natural and it can look like a butt wink.
Just has
and
to be so supported.
I've never had a client that the butt wink was a problem that also didn't feel it.
So typically when you have a butt wink and it's a problem, you feel your low back. Your low back feels on fire because it's the excessive flexing and extending.
It looks like posterior anterior.
Yeah.
Posterior
it's, anterior. And then I used to have this, and like I would do a set of especially high rep squats, and I'd be like, oh my God, my low back is on fire. And it's because those erector spinae muscles are on fire from the flexing and extending of the spine. And so there's an issue there. Like there's an issue I need to address in order to gain the access to squat that deep. But if you squat that deep and you don't feel low back on fire, you don't feel any problems, you're probably fine. And at least in my experience, that's how it's been.
When it's not supported, that force doesn't get distributed down through the rest of your muscles and the major muscle groups in your legs. It stops at the weakest point. And so if you're unsupported in that position where then you do tuck, like all that load, the force from the load is going to direct right in that spot.
Yeah. So it'll let you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's excessive and unhealthy, you probably know, at least in my experience. Like,
but what's funny is like some of the greatest squatters in the world, Olympic lifters, I mean, they hit the bottom when they do like a snatch or whatever.
Yeah.
There's butt wink there. Yeah. And they're lifting weights that are unheard of.
Yeah.
Next question is from Good Juju Gains. What's the number one piece of advice you would give to a personal training studio wanting to grow and look for good trainers?
All right, I'm going to start with the looking to grow part or wanting to grow part. Like this has got to be the number one, and it was back then when I had a studio, and it's even worse now. The number one missed way that you can grow your studio is go outside and talk to local businesses. Like, people don't do this. They're afraid to. They're afraid to introduce themselves. They don't understand that they need to become the fitness mayor of their community. And it's especially worse now because there's been so much value placed on social media that personal training studios think it's all about social media. This is how we're going to build our business. No. If I went into a studio right now and I was hired by the owner and they told me, can you double my revenue in 30 days? I would do zero on social media, zero. That's not where I would spend my time. I would go outside their studio. I would introduce myself to all the local businesses. I'd get all the managers and owners in the studio for free workouts, and I would start right there. And before you know it, that would turn into a referral factory. That was the number one and almost only thing I did with my studio when I first opened it. And it was so successful, and it's basic. It just requires a little discomfort. Again, I think people are afraid to go talk to people, but that's the number one thing. That's the number one thing. It's always been the number one thing.
I don't think it's far off from my advice. One, it's hard for me to just give one piece. So I apologize because I can ramble with stuff like this because I think there's so many things that you can and should be doing. But the easiest is because what you want is you want to get in front of as many people as you possibly can. And you want to make that very easy for them. Mm-hmm. So doing something that is for free where you can help somebody and you can scale. So something like a class where, and I love I've told all trainers that have followed us, like, if you haven't taken my Prime Pro webinar and used that to teach a free class, you're an idiot. Just are. It's like so low hanging fruit. So many people that will buy personal training are the same people that suffer from chronic pain and have mobility issues. And if you take them through that full mobility webinar, I guarantee in that one first hour, they will feel a difference. And it's 1 hour of your time. And so then I'm going to use Sal's advice. I'm going to all the local businesses and people outside of my gym that are around me, and I'm going to offer this free class. Mm-hmm. And it might look like every Saturday at 8 a.m., I host a free mobility class to help you with chronic pain. That might be how I market it or put on my flyers. And I'm going around and I'm offering that to as many people as I can. And my goal is, can I get 30 to 50 people inside my studio that are taking this mobility class from me that gives me the opportunity to impact them in a way where they go, wow, that was really helpful. Or why does that feel so much better, Adam? Or what did you just do? So then I can go, I tell you what, I know I have a full class of 50 people right now. Let's book an appointment, you and I, one-on-one, totally free again, where I'm going to sit down and we'll do a deep dive on just you, and I'll do a full assessment, and then we'll go from there. And I would just use that as a lead generating machine. And I would just go out and get, and then even when I finally moved into social media, that would be the place I funnel people to on social media.
That's right. That's what you use it for, is to support your business, not build it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's look, every trainer knows this. The best referrals you'll ever get are from a client that really likes working with you and sees your value. Like, that is, there's nothing like that. No, you can't pay for that kind of referral. So what if you got, this is what I did when I first opened my studio. I had like 10 clients. All of them were either managers or owners of local businesses, and they all trained with me for free. And I knew I would do a good job. And before I knew it, it was literally weeks before they were sending me customers and referrals. And those people knew them, would come in, and it was like, I'll hire you.
Well, over service the current clientele you have.
Yeah. Well, so to piggyback off of both of what you're saying right now with the tip that I'm giving right now. So let's say you hear this right now. You're like, oh shit, that's a good idea. This Saturday I could do that. But oh man, I only have 4 days to go book that, or whatever day this is going live. That's, and you can't get a bunch of people. Offer it to your current clients already as a free service. So a couple things happen here. So I've got, let's say I've got 10 or 15 clients that I train already. It's like, it now becomes a way for me to add value to my current clientele base, which is like, when they're all like, what? Now you're gonna do this for free?
You're walking billboard anyway.
Now I automatically have 10 or 15 people in this class, so it doesn't look like I'm talking to myself, right? And then I encourage them, hey, bring your husband. Yep. Hey, bring your sister-in-law that you were talking about.
Co-worker.
Bring a friend.
And it's a low barrier. They'll bring them because it's free.
And so now I get them. So they're loving me because I'm over-delivering on my service that they're already currently paying for with me. They already have a relationship with me, so no one's going to sell me better than the clients that I'm already servicing well. So they're going to bring some of the best leads. And then in addition to that, I'm going to go out like Sal was saying. And my number first goal before it is to make money is, can I load that sucker with 30 to 50 people every Saturday?
And also just the second part of the question is finding good trainers. Like, you know, and this also complements like just kind of going into the quality of like what you currently have situated right there. You bring in certifications, you bring in educators, you bring people in to service your current training staff that you have. But also what that does brings outside trainers in, it brings other people's attention into your spot. And so they know that this is the type of quality that we're looking for.
Yeah, but here's the real problem. I tell you guys, right, 100%, because this was a space I worked in for 15 years. And the issue, here's what the personal training studio owner wants. And here's what they think they're going to get. They're going to get that established trainer with a client base who's training somewhere else to come bring all their clients to them. And boom, I got this trainer paying rent or whatever. No, that's not how it works. Here's the problem. The problem isn't finding good trainers. The problem is that personal training studio owners don't mentor trainers.
Yeah.
So when a trainer would come to me, I would interview him. And if I said, okay, I like their character, I would charge rent. You pay rent to train your clients, but here's what we're going to do. For the first 3 months, it's half rent, and I'm going to take you under my wing, and I'm going to help you build your business. And I would mentor them for 90 days, and they almost all succeeded. Almost all of them built a client base, and it wasn't a problem. But you have to mentor. The trainers need mentorship. Finding that one trainer who's already successful, who already has a client load, like, and is willing to come over and just move their clients to you, that's like a diamond. That almost never happens.
Doug, can you look this person up and tell me if they're in our course too? Because if you're asking questions like this and you're not, and this is where our entire focus is right now with this business, is servicing personal trainers and people trying to scale and build their business. And so your ass better be in the course. Because that's obvious. Like, you ask a question like that and you need help. Like, that's all of our energy is focused right now on helping people just like you do exactly what you're trying to do. And so the first step would be get in there and get in a community, because you could also pluck our trainers.
Your support system.
We got over 1,000 trainers in there that we're training, we're developing, we're teaching. And if you are listening to this podcast, I imagine that you align with a lot of the things that we communicate. So if you got one of these people that we're training and developing and they're in your area, then take them, then get them working for you.
And again, I think the issue, because they're saying good trainers, what they've probably experienced is people, trainers, trying to work there and build a business who then fall off.
They'll take off.
It's a high turnover.
It is.
Trainers have a high turnover rate because they don't have good mentorship. Yep. And so if you want to fix that, when they come in your studio, it's your job as a studio owner. I'm going to mentor this person. I would literally go out and help them get leads. I would help them set up body fat test booths. I would do TOs for them to help sell training. I was like, I'm going to build this person's business and mentor them so they can be a good trainer in my facility.
Get in the course.
That's it. Look, if you like our podcast, you got to come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs.
With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Children are the greatest joy and our best hope for a better future. Friends, they are the future. But did you know that millions of kids are facing hunger every day? Food is not just food. It's energy, health, confidence, hope, and even love. Yes, love.
Thank you!
Learn more about how No Kid Hungry is helping end child hunger in America at helpnokidhungry.org.